Hello, we're the Cryptic Code. I'm your host, Harmon, and I once again find myself alone at Cryptic Code HQ. Sadly, due to scheduling issues, my co-hosts were unable to join me. However, I still wanted to get something out for you guys, so I'm forcing my family to join me as I discuss cryptids, aliens, and generally anything spooky. You guys want to introduce yourselves?
I prefer special guest.
Okay, if it makes you feel better.
I am Bryson Langer. I'm his brother. And the person who wanted to be called special guest is his father.
We all sound the same, so this episode might be a little confusing. Don't worry, we're going to get through it together.
With beer, all things are possible.
And since we're already shaking things up, I wanted to take this chance to try something a little different. When I can't get my regular co-host or I'm solo for an episode, I don't want to do a full, dedicated deep dive for a singular cryptid. Instead, I want to present a sort of a sampler tray of paranormal cases, individual encounters, or smaller stories that wouldn't fit our normal format. So, gentlemen, are you ready to join me as we crack open the Cryptid Code casebook?
Sure. Yeah.
Now, I prepared three cases for you all today. A cryptid sighting, an alien encounter, and a ghost story. And I'll actually give you all the choice which one you want to cover first.
Dealer's choice.
Dealer's choice.
All right.
As you have it written.
I made it modifiable. All right. So we'll start with the cryptid. Cryptid hunt is taking us to Hearne, Texas, a small town with a population of about 4,544 people. It is also the hometown of one of the inventors of the Texas Instrument Pocket Calculator.
Nice.
Yeah. You all use that in school? Yes. I know you use like clay tablets, Dad, so like...
No, we had little bead things with a slide.
The abacus?
Yes, those.
No, it's a bead thing with a slide. While it might be the origin point of a vital scientific device used in classrooms all across the country, it also has its fair share of the irrational. In fact, the case we're about to cover more than makes up for its brevity with its sheer strangeness as we search for the baffling beast known as the Porch Nibbler.
I'm sorry. The Porch Nibbler.
Yeah.
That sounds like a toe-sucking dude.
What the fuck? You can't just drop that on us, Father.
I'm a little perplexed how he got this name, so yeah, I guess...
Let's... any nibbles on people's toes. I mean,
Porch Nibbler?
Yeah.
Porch, okay.
Fall asleep on the porch, wake up, some dude nibbling on your toes. It happens, man, trust me.
No, it doesn't. That doesn't happen.
Hey.
At least not meth.
The manager just got arrested at a hotel for nibbling on people's toes in their sleep. Helping them, letting himself in their rooms while they were sleeping.
Wait, really?
Yes.
That sounds like that's like a Stephen King story.
It just happened. I saw it on the news yesterday.
Anyway, continue, please.
This news site wasn't Facebook, was it, Dad?
No, it was on the actual news.
Well, actual news, we'll put quotation marks around that.
CIA-approved news.
Politics. I first heard of this creature from the Cryptonaut podcast, and they're actually the ones who gave it the name. There's not a lot of information on it, but I did manage to hunt down a single news article. The bulk of our tale comes from the October 24th, 1985 issue of the Greenwood, South Carolina newspaper, the Index Journal. Okay. Came out just in time for Halloween. And I'll just read it verbatim. Quote, Hearne, Texas, AP. A tall, mysterious creature appears to have begun trick-or-treating a week early, say police who have been getting reports about something leaping from rooftop to rooftop and gnawing on front porches. The creature has reportedly torn screen windows and scared a dog, Police Chief James Bundren said Wednesday.
Oh my god, it's an angry beaver.
It's just a massive beaver running around. And we're not going to take that out of context, internet.
Good luck with that.
I just love scared a dog. is in the official police report. It's Halloween time, and there might be a lot of creatures out there. Every now and then, someone calls and says they think they heard the creature. One resident told authorities last week that something about 6 feet tall chewed up his porch, screen, and railing, Bundren said. The resident heard a noise at the front door during the night and went to investigate. When he opened the door, Bundren said he saw, quote, image of a man, but it had a head that was chewing and slapping at the door, end quote.
What? Chewing and slapping at the door with his head?
Yeah.
Like headbutting?
I don't know. This is it. This is all the context you get. The resident told police...
That hell of a drug.
The resident told police he quickly slammed the door. He looked out the window and saw his frightened dog running down the street. Britt Bundren said the pet still has not yet returned. What?
If I saw a meth head chewing on a porch, I think I'd run too.
I'd probably go save my dog, but then we live in West Virginia and have firearms, so.
Yeah. It's Texas, Bryson.
You know they have guns.
They might have guns. That you never they know. It might. Could be near Austin.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But Carry this on. Is the 80s.
Yeah, that's true.
Everyone was doing cocaine and, like, I don't know, had an Uzi. I only know Miami Vice. That's my reference for the 80s. Another resident told police she heard something large land on the side of her roof. Walk to the other side and leap off the carport, he said. But police found no tracks around the house. Quote, it raised all kinds of commotion around here after that happened, he said, adding that calls are still coming in from people saying they heard the creature. Bundren said police have no suspects, but that the first homeowner may have seen a man holding a large dog in front of him. End of article. A large dog in front of him.
So he eats wood and saves puppies.
I guess.
My kind of meth head.
I don't know how to respond. There's not enough information to make any judgment on this. You get one article, and I'm guessing there wasn't a follow-up.
Could it be like a weird beaver man? You brought up the beaver, and, you know, in a panic, snout looks like snout, so, like, they could see a dog head.
But why take the dog?
No, the dog ran away.
But he was carrying the dog, you said.
No, he was carrying a dog.
The police's theory is that the man on the porch, the six-foot figure, eating the porch, was a man holding a dog. Out in front of him.
Okay. I'm going with early meth head. Post crack head.
Was that a thing back then?
Yeah.
When was meth invented?
They used it during World War II. Nazis drove tanks on meth. Duh.
Actually, that is true.
Shit, he got me there. He got me dead to rights.
Panzer chocolate.
Panzer chocolate. That actually brings us to a good point. Actually, a bizarrely perfect... segue, because I was looking it up. Hearn was actually home during the 40s to a POW camp for German soldiers.
Calling it German meth head.
And that's actually kind of possible. That sounds weird. Hear me out. POW camp that is apparently said to be haunted due to the murder of a man named Hugo Kraus there. He was murdered by his other, like...
Inmates,
because they thought he was being disloyal to Nazi Germany. Yeah. But there was a case, I believe, in Virginia of a German POW who escaped prison, staying out in the forest until the 80s when he finally gave himself up. He just blended in with the population. So could this be an, I don't know, escaped German prisoner of war who, I don't know, smuggled in a bar of Panzer chocolate up his ass? I don't know. It's something. It's so weird.
Maybe he's early Walter White.
Do you want to elaborate for people who haven't seen Breaking Bad?
There's three people who haven't seen Breaking Bad. I'm thinking.
Yeah, and two of them are around the table.
Hey, I've seen it.
I've seen Breaking Bad. I haven't seen Breaking Bad. I haven't seen Lost. I'm sorry, guys.
I don't know. I'm still more amazed about the Virginia guy who blended into society. Was he rearrested or was just like, it's been 40 years, we don't care anymore, man?
He was like, I think he was Wehrmacht, so it's not like he had war crimes.
There was a Nazi prison guard who lived in Cleveland and was a grandfather and everything. He was just working at an auto plant like it was nothing. So they caught up with him. Somebody recognized him. Oof. Yeah. So 50 years later, oh shit, it's the dude. So maybe he wasn't on meth though.
Should have gone to Argentina, dumbass.
I know, with the rest of the plan.
Anyway, I don't know what to say about this one, so let's go to the next story.
Hey, or bath salts. I mean, bath salts make you chew off people's faces, eat trees.
I don't think that's actually true though. I think those bath salts were laced with something else.
Meth.
I don't know, man.
Everything goes back to meth.
I don't think it does, Father.
It's like a Scooby-Doo mystery. You pull off the hat, it's meth.
There's only two things certain in this life. Meth and taxes.
We have gotten very off topic.
There wasn't much of a topic to begin with, Bryson. It's easy to fall off that platform.
It's a podcast. You roll with it, bro.
All right, I guess we're rolling with it.
Well, it's odd that the official explanation is the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
I like how they just casually threw, oh yeah, he scared a dog. What kind of dog was it? Was it a poodle? Yes, they scare easily. Was it a Rottweiler? I'm thinking it was something bigger.
Listen, they pay by the letter. You have to skim some details. A lot of details. Just eating porches. All I can think is like a werebeaver.
A very particularly aggressive squirrel. I mean,
a 6'4" on steroid squirrel
eating porch.
He's all pumped from the gym.
Yeah, I'm going nuts.
That fucking porch is going down.
Well, Hans and Blitz are old dogs. They used to chew on the porch.
That's true.
They're also not squirrels, right?
I'm just saying, it could have been a dog.
They're saying the porches were eaten, so I assume that means them bitches gone.
Like, the entire porch, like, can't have shit in Cleveland, or like just a big bite, like, someone opened up a thing of Hubba Bubba bubblegum, and instead of taking it like a normal human being, they just bit into the circle. Remember those things?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like Detroit, you walk outside the door, fucking porch is gone. Nice.
And the,
real nice.
The comments and views of my family do not necessarily reflect their views of the producers of the Cryptic Code.
What's that have to do with Detroit, Cleveland, please biting don't into Hubba Bubba bubblegum?
Please don't cancel me for my father saying possibly offensive things. Where was I? Oh, right. Yeah, I'm going werebeaver. That's my vote.
I'm still going with German meth head.
Undecided.
Chupacabra. Always go with Chupacabra if you don't know.
Famously, in Spanish, translate to porch sucker.
Maybe it was a shapeshifter.
The cryptids took my porch because I'm grounded.
He shapeshifted into a giant beaver.
Continue. Next story, please.
Now we're going to move on to our UFO encounter. And out...
Dude, they just shot down another one over Canada.
Another one?
Yeah, that's 3 in 2 days.
Wait, there's been more. Okay.
I need to look into that. Out of Wisconsin comes one of the weirdest UFO encounters on the books.
It's made of cheese. Oh, sorry, I'll let you actually finish.
It's... You're on the right track, in a way. Allow me to set the scene. It's April 18th, 1961, and 6-year-old John Simonton is enjoying a nice breakfast on his farmhouse on the outskirts of Eagle River.
6-year-old?
60-year-old.
Oh, okay.
I imagine your standard American breakfast, eggs, bacon, possibly, I don't know, fruit. However, his peaceful breakfast was interrupted by a loud noise outside. When Simonton went to investigate, he found that a flying saucer had descended upon his farm. He described it as a typical flying saucer that was, quote, brighter than chrome. It had a height of 4 meters and a diameter of 10 meters, with what appeared to be exhaust pipes on the side. A hatch opened on the side.
Yes. Exhaust pipes.
That's a surprisingly common thing, like the Kentucky Goblins.
It's got headers and shit on it. Make it faster.
It's a hot rod of UFO.
That's my first thought.
It's my space rod. I need some moonshine to put in it and make it go faster.
A hatch opened on the side, and Simonton was greeted by three men in tight clothing and helmets. Simonton described them as around 5 feet tall and having dark, quote, Italian-looking skin. Just, I know they're not, okay. I know American and Italian-American are different. Italian and Italian-American are different, but I imagine the cast of The Sopranos getting out. Yo, I don't think we're in Jersey no more, don't.
The Space Italian Empire.
Yo, I'm fucking flying here. You're about to say something, Dan? Hopefully nothing. I'll get us canceled on Twitter.
I was thinking race car drivers. Short, skinny, wearing helmets, and a hot rod.
Oh, you're actually kind of right. Because it's turtleneck, so it covers all the way like a jumpsuit.
I'm saying. And Italians, helmets. Too. You know, back then it was Monte Carlo racing. Hey, we're here for the bust.
It's Ferrari.
We're testing out a new car.
There's a giant Ferrari on the side. One of the men leaned out the window and handed Simonton a strange-looking bucket that resembled a metallic jar with two handles. The supposed extraterrestrial gestured towards Simonton's well, implying that they wanted him to fill it up with water. He obliged, but when he handed them the now full bucket, he managed to glimpse inside the machine. The interior was pitch black, almost as if they were standing in a void. Some things were visible, however, including another man inside the craft, described as wearing red stripes and attending a grill. Said grill had no flames.
They took Waldo, those bastards.
It appeared to be a griddle of some form, as the man was making pancakes.
Son of a bitch.
He was making pancakes.
Yes.
I'm saying Area 51 overheated, needed water put in it.
From Wisconsin?
They were flying across. Shit happens.
They're doing a pancake
plan? I thought they were getting a bucket full of crap. Be like, dude, our bathroom's broke. Can you dump this?
Dude just has a George Foreman grill.
Well, he said no flame, so it has to be an electric grill.
Yeah. In the 60s.
As thanks for the water, the kindly aliens actually gave Simonton 4 of the pancakes. Satisfied with their deal, the flying saucer flew off in a southward direction, and leaving Simonton behind with a breakfast that changed his life forever, and leaves us standing, asking ourselves the eternal, ever-present question.
WTF.
All paranormal investigators ponder. What the fuck? You're very right.
I didn't know that there was space IHOP.
Okay. Time-traveling Packer fans.
Packers. Then they would have cheese heads on.
Well, if you have to wear your helmet inside while you're driving in your hot rod. Did the Packers go to the Super Bowl in 61?
Bryson, look it up.
I don't have my phone on me.
Grab my phone. Super Bowl winners, 1961.
Just put 61 Packers. Telling you, time travelers.
They had a record 11-3 under 3-year head coach Vince Lombardi.
Lombardi? Yeah, that's not Italian at all. They're there. It's Lombardi's family from the future coming to watch him.
None of those words mean anything to me. I don't watch football or Lost or was the show we referenced Breaking Bad
or The Sopranos.
Yeah. All I know is it ends with Don't Stop Believin'. Now, it would be easy to write this off as someone just tripping out. And some people have done that. One of the theories surrounding the case is that Simonton had fallen asleep and simply mistaken a dream for reality. But there's an issue with that. Simonton still had the pancakes. In a bizarre twist, the most surreal aspect of this encounter, the Fortean flapjacks also made for the strongest physical evidence. Yeah.
But were they special?
Kind of. The pancakes were 7.5 centimeters in diameter and dotted with small holes. Were you about to say something?
Well, you could always just say he made the pancake himself.
We'll get there. According to Simonton, they tasted like cardboard. One of them was sent to local county judge Frank W. Carter.
Said it tastes like ass.
I wanted to get a second opinion. Said judge also vouched for Joe's credibility and honesty as a witness. Carter also later sent the pancake to the National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena for testing.
Ladies and gentlemen, your tax dollars at work.
Oh, that's a private organization.
Oh. Okay. What conclusion did they come to?
We'll get there. The second one was put in the custody of Project Blue Book, the Air Force's official investigation into UFOs.
Okay, shit just got real.
Okay, I now believe this. I know.
Specifically, astronomer J. Allen Hynek was sent to interview Simonton and actually found himself impressed with him as a witness. He took the pancake to the Air Force Technical Intelligence Center. And a third one was sent to the Food and Drug Administration.
Oh my gosh.
Analysis found that the ingredients were flour, sugar, and grease. But J. Raff, author of the W Files, claimed that there were rumors that the particular strand of wheat used was one not yet known to science.
Told you. Time travelers, they needed water. Flapjacks were just a little too dry. That's why they were like cardboard.
They come from like,
did you put syrup on them, asshole, like you're supposed to? No.
They come from like the Mad Max future. There's an abundance of pancakes for some reason, but no water.
Dude, we're out.
How are y'all feeling about this? Because
the fact that Project Blue Book got involved makes me a little bit more open to the idea. Dimensional time travel is just mathematically possible.
He has his hooks sinked into that theory.
I'm telling you, that's what it is.
He goes, time travelers, and they gave me pancakes.
I'm going to go with space Italians.
Bring it back to the Roman Empire.
Yeah, the Roman Empire never fell, it just went to a different planet.
They needed the water to make pasta. We're having pancakes, but pasta for lunch.
But it's also the fact that Simonton was the one who sent pancakes to the judge and the Food and Drug Administration. As far as I can tell, he was the one who sent them out. He wasn't ordered to do that, which makes it a little bit more credible in my eyes that he's willing to put his
reputation.
Yeah, put his money where his pancakes are. So, like, he sent it in.
He's a better man than me. I don't share pancakes. Fuck that.
Oh, I thought you were going to say you would just keep it to yourself.
The pancakes. Tell the story, but I'd eat the pancakes.
They taste like cardboard, though.
Butter and syrup make everything better.
Okay, shit. Sorry, Bob. Fuck. How about you, Bryson? How are you feeling about this so far?
I don't know. I'm leaning towards believe just because the Blue Book thing. Because they wouldn't waste those kind of resources for something this trivial if there wasn't something more to it that we don't know.
I want to know where the pancakes are now.
He still had, well, he had one up until he died. He would take, like, photos with it.
I bet you they're in the cheese cave.
They're in the cheese cave. For those who don't know, what was it? 24 million pounds of cheese is kept in a cave in Alabama. Missouri.
by the federal government.
Open the cheese cave, Mr. President. Now, Project Blue Book did look into some dumb cases. They had to spread kind of a wide net. But yeah, it does lend some credibility that they did look into it and they took the sample.
And the USDA said it was from wheat that has never existed.
Well, that's a rumor.
That's a rumor.
On top of that, Simonton was not the only witness that day.
Let me guess, his dog.
Insurance agent Savano Borgo.
Another Italian.
I wasn't going to say anything. Claimed to have witnessed a saucer while driving past the farm. So after all that, we're left with facts as clear as syrup. And a conundrum about a sticky. The entire interaction is too surreal to be believable, yet it's presented by a no-nonsense, honest farmer who had physical evidence who was more than willing to let it be studied. So that makes it unlikely it was a hoax. And the witness and the fact the pancakes are there make it unlikely it was a hallucination or a dream, like they said. It appears it's just one of those utterly inexplicable cases that pushes our concept of reality and delusion, of what weirdness could truly be out there. And as Fortean investigators waffle on the believability of Joe Simonton and his cosmic pancakes, it is easy to see why Project Blue Book simply shrugged their shoulders and to this day have labeled the case unexplained. Thoughts?
Okay, I'm still tripping about the dude wearing a red striped shirt inside making pancakes in the morning. What the hell?
In the void. I think we've forgotten they were in the void.
On a flameless grill. The dude had priorities. It was a flameless grill, dude. Pancakes taste like air. Always use propane and propane accessories.
If you stare too long into the abyss, it'll hand you pancakes.
Oh, Lord.
I can just imagine like a meme of like one of the background fishes from SpongeBob working on a grill and it's like making food in the void and it's just all black in the background.
If you can add thumbnails, add a thumbnail of that.
Let me just break out my artist skills.
Isn't there a fish on SpongeBob that wears a red and white shirt and flips pancakes or burgers?
I don't know.
There's old man Jenkins who occasionally wears like a racing uniform with that.
Anyway.
And that's going to leave us with our ghost story, which is thankfully significantly less odd than our first two. And our ghost hunt is going to take us among the haunting hills of Harper's Ferry. Most well known for the John Brown Raid, and originally founded in 1733, it's no surprise that a historic town and national park has its fair share of ghost stories. Of course, many claim to see apparitions of the men who fought and died that fateful night, but for this case, we're actually heading to the outskirts of town, specifically to the Harper's Ferry Depot, part of the Baltimore and Ohio Rail Line. Near the depot is a series of abandoned storage sheds that were once used to hold equipment, but were then used as shelter for the local homeless. And among them was a destitute young woman named Jenny.
Oh, okay.
You know, I know this one.
And it's in Shenandoah Junction. I've been to the house.
I've heard two different versions. Most of the versions I find say it's Harper's Ferry. But then I also find versions saying Shenandoah Junction.
It is.
So that'll get into our explanation later.
Yeah. I've thrown beer bottles at that house.
Why would you do that? You're the team.
Maybe she was thirsty.
No, I don't think she's going to take your bottles and then give you ghost pancakes. You're the teens from an 80s movie who die.
Yeah, I was a fat one. I was a slow one.
Now, Jenny was a kind but desperate woman who was seen as a rare source of happiness among the downtrodden folks who gathered there. She was marked as being kind, generous, and just being a welcome kindred spirit there. According to the story, she was spending a cold winter night huddled around her small fire, hoping to stave off the chill, she edged closer and closer to the flame, when suddenly, a spark leapt from the fire and onto her dress. In moments, the fire spread and she ran towards the train station in hopes of reaching help, her agonized, frightful howls echoing through the uncaring forest. Now a flailing ball of flame, she stumbled onto the train tracks, the fire drowning her senses in pain. So much so that she did not hear the whistle, nor feel the tremble of the tracks, nor even see the train until it was upon her. Her screams, in a moment, came to an end, replaced by the screeching of brakes as the conductor tried to stop the train, only for it to plow straight through her. When the locomotive came to a halt, the crew discovered what remained of poor Jenny. They decided to bury her next to the train tracks in an unmarked grave. According to some reports, this was done in order to give her a proper burial. Seems more to me, however, as an attempt to hide evidence, but who really knows? Tragic, yes, but the story takes a turn for the spooky when exactly a month later, the same train and crew were passing through that spot. Suddenly, a burning figure stepped onto the tracks, and despite their attempts to stop, the train once again collided with the victim. Yet, as they searched for a body, none was found. It was then that the crew realized that they were witnesses to something truly paranormal. It is said that ever since, town folk will hear her screams and see her flames alight amidst the shadow of the trees, a grim memorial to mark the anniversary of her death. But that's going to wrap it up for this evening's dive into the Cryptid Code casebook of the three stories. Which ones are you leaning towards? Real or not real?
Definitely the UFO one, I think, has the most credibility. The first one, there's just so little evidence that I'm, like, in the maybe category. And I don't know much about the fact that there's multiple Screaming Jenny stories. I know Jenny's a common name, but it's too...
Jenny.
Repeatable.
Yeah.
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 It's folklore. And I've never seen Jenny, so I don't believe. I mean, I've seen ghosts, but I haven't seen that ghost. And the UFO, I'm saying, like I said before, same.
Okay.
It's probably somebody who wanted to watch the Packers.
I think the UFO is the most believable, too. And that's a little unfair because I'm an alien guy. I love aliens.
Gay.
But that's going to wrap it up for the evening's dive into the Cryptic Code casebook. It was a bit different, but I think this episode worked out all right. If you like or even dislike this format, be sure to reach out to us on Twitter at The Cryptic Code, or you can email us at thecrypticcode@hotmail.com. Yes, I have a Hotmail because I'm an old man. Also, reach out if you have your own paranormal encounters or suggestions for other cases. Until then, remember, porches are not part of a balanced breakfast. Don't accept pancakes from strangers and unmarked UFOs. And most of all, stay spooky out there. Good night.